For 25 years, Mike's has been making lemonade the hard way. Mike's Hard Lemonade. Hard days deserve a hard lemonade. Mike's is hard, so is prison. Don't drive drunk. Premium all beverage with flavors. All registered trademarks used under license by Mike's Hard Lemonade Company, Chicago, Illinois.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Drunk Bruce Arians from the post-Super Bowl celebration telling both Lavonte David and Chris Godwin, your ass ain't going nowhere. Sorry, London, right out of the gates.
Bam.
And that's a fitting introduction to the show because Chris's ass went somewhere. We're 20 seconds to air, yeah. And he's running around in the studio looking for a garbage can. Just throw that on the floor. We got a TV show to do. What the hell?
Well, I have my coffee cup, right? So I put hot water in it. So, like, the cup is hot when I pour the coffee in it, right? So usually a few seconds before the show, I dump that hot water into the garbage can, and then I fill it up with coffee. So we had to make other plans because I couldn't get the garbage can. So there's a puddle.
Wait a minute.
A puddle on the floor here at NBC Studios right now.
This unlocks an entire universe questions.
Yes.
Let me begin with this.
Right.
What the hell did you just say?
What the hell?
You put hot water in a cup?
I do. Like,
to keep the cup warm?
I want the cup.
The coffee's hot.
I know.
The coffee warms the cup.
The mug only stays hot so long, so I want my coffee nice and hot. And sometimes I come in here, the studio's cold, my cup's freezing, so I pour the coffee in there, and it's cold, you know. It doesn't stay warm long enough, so it's a little bit of my process. So that's what I do. So the cup gets nice and hot, I pour the coffee in there, and now I can sip and feel good. And usually there's a garbage can there. Now there's a puddle.
So you also have a habit, I'm now learning, of actually pouring liquids into the trash.
Yes, right now
that's,
I do.
That's part of your process.
Is that a bad thing?
When the custodians come
right
to empty the garbage, they have a surprise in the form of liquid that has been mixed with all the other stuff that's been thrown in the trash can. That's what you're telling me.
Well, I guess so, but I mean, I don't know. Is that crazy? I mean, I see people discard, like, you know, little milk with cereal into the, and there's still milk in it. So I don't think it's that crazy of an
you
idea.
Mean
there.
You, well, people,
I, other
mean
people,
you?
I see
you
other
see
people,
yourself
people
do it?
Here at NBC. I see them do it. So I mean, a little liquid in the garbage, is that? I didn't know that was against the law. Now,
pouring water on the floor
might be against the law.
I try, especially if you slip and fall in it and break something, but you've just supplied NBC with all that they'll need to successfully defend the workers' comp process
yes.
that you would initiate because it's your own damn fault that you put the water on the floor. One of my pet peeves is when I'm in a Starbucks, and I haven't been in a Starbucks in a very long time, been anywhere in a very long time because of the pandemic, and somebody gets a coffee, instead of asking them to leave room for milk, they actually pour the coffee, the excess coffee, into the hole in the trash. And I'm thinking, somebody's got to deal with that at some point. They don't need a bunch of coffee. Imagine if, you know, 5% of the people who come in over the course of the day do that, how much coffee you're getting into the I'm just, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Somebody who once cleaned out dumpsters at Kentucky Fried Chicken, I have some sympathy or empathy, I never know the right word, for people who have to deal with foul, disgusting messes. Pouring water into the garbage can is something that I'm just trying to think of the people who have to deal with your mess.
All right.
Once it mixes with the other trash, it can be that way.
Okay, it can be. I mean, trash is trash. So, I don't know what else
you're putting in garbage now, and I don't think I want to know. We got a show to get to.
Okay, let's go.
All right. There's a segue somewhere, somehow, between putting things in the trash can and applying or not applying the franchise tag, but I'm not sufficiently witty to come up with that. Let's just say it's time to get to the show. Yesterday was the deadline for putting the franchise tag on any player whose contract will otherwise expire on Wednesday, March 17 at 4 p.m. Eastern. Now, let's just enter this discussion acknowledging what the franchise tag is. Whatever word you apply to it, you can call it anything you want. It's a device for the teams to keep players from getting to the open market and maximizing their compensation, specifically into that second year, guaranteed money into that second year. You always get less under the franchise tag, unless you've got general managers, owners, coaches who don't know what the hell you're doing. The player's getting less than he otherwise could have gotten by hitting the open market. This isn't a good thing. We explained that last week. It's not a positive thing. It's not an honor. It's not some sort of distinction or designation that the player gets a trophy for. It's a thing that keeps a player from getting what he should be getting, or at least delaying it for now. So, with that said, Chris, 10 franchise tags were extended on Tuesday. And let's dispense with Dak Prescott right out of the gates. We talked about this yesterday. That was done at his mandate, at his directive, to ensure that he'll never be tagged again. That's the first time that I think this has ever happened, where a guy does a long-term deal before the deadline for applying the tag, and he gets the team to apply the tag anyway because it helps in his quest to never be tagged again.
Right. No, I've never seen that. I don't. I mean, you know, me in general, first off, I mean, that was a smooth move by Dak Prescott, his representation, all of that, certainly. And, you know, back to the franchise thing, too. Yeah, it drives me crazy just to make one comment on that. I don't like the franchise tag. Is that ex-player? Of course I don't. Why would I like the franchise tag? It's the only business in the world that has anything similar to that. Hey, you're one of the best there is out there, but we're not going to give you any long-term security. We're going to screw you over in one of the riskiest businesses, you know, there is out there. And I understand they're going to make a big chunk of change, but it's still about market price. And that's where I hate the franchise tag, because it really does limit players and their ability sometimes to get that big payday, get that long-term security, and not have to worry about, ooh, I got injured and now everything's, you know, down the drain.
You know, we've been doing this for 3.5 years.
Yeah.
Eventually, later this year, it'll be 4. That's how the passage of time works. I think I'm starting to get you to come around on my notion that the draft is anti-American and there's no other industry in which incoming employees are distributed that way. Because at the core of what you just said about the franchise tag is the same concern. There's no other business where the employees get treated this way. You're punished for your success. You're restricted because you're good. You're due to earn, so you can't. That's the franchise tag. And Chris, here's the reality.
Right.
From time to time, I'll hear union or players or whoever say, well, the franchise tag's got to go. Well, it's not going anywhere because, first of all, the league has to put it on the table for negotiation within the confines of CBA discussions.
Right.
Second of all, if it ever would be on the table, think about the value that it has to a team. Think about the value it has to the league in holding down salary, because every guy that you tag is one less guy who can stretch that rubber band as far as possible and pull others with him, because now he's got a new record high contract that he gets on the open market. The value of the tag to the league would make the concession that the union would have to give to get the league to give up the tag astronomical. So it's never going away. It's always going to be part. Yeah. Watch, they'll get rid of it next year now that I said that.
No,
but I believe it's always going to be part of the fabric of the NFL because it's been there. And one last point. We were texting about this in the aftermath of that great photo of the quarterback club with Steve Young on his tiptoes like Cristiano Ronaldo and Phil with his hands on Jim Everett's shoulders and just a great picture with Zubaz print
right,
everywhere.
Right.
That was the quarterback club that emerged in the aftermath of the shutting down of the union after the failed 1987 strike. There was a great antitrust lawsuit led by Reggie White. The players had the league on the ropes, and they settled for this CBA that has the franchise tag in it. I'm a firm believer they should have kept pushing. They should have kept going and going and going and going, and maybe there would have never been a franchise tag. So that's where it came from, from that antitrust litigation, and it's never leaving, and we just have to deal with it. But it's not a day of celebration for the players. It's a day of celebration for the ones who aren't tagged. It's not a day of celebration for the ones who are.
No, it's not. You know, it's a little bit of like, oh, man, I'm not going to get a long-term contract. There is a little bit of, wait, I am the franchise guy, where you do feel special. You know, I mean, of course, that there was that thought in the locker room as I was playing, like to go, hey, I'm the franchise guy. They were willing to give me that money and do that. But still, that's not what you want as a player, even though that guy could wear that as a badge of honor. And, yeah, I'm making a lot of money this 1 year. And, hey, I'm obviously important to the team. I'm the one guy they franchised. Nobody wants it. So, yes. And, again, I'm not trying to sound like a spoiled brat and make players sound like spoiled brats, too.
They're not spoiled.
I know.
They're not spoiled.
I know. But
they're entitled
you know,
to make every last penny they can get.
I know. But I'm just, you know, I'm going by if you read the comments under some article you write about this on Pro Football Talk or anywhere. I know.
Don't.
But that's where all spoiled players and all they do is
screw
play
them.
Football. I know.
Screw them
is right. Okay.
They're entitled
to
their opinion, but we're entitled to say screw them.
Yes. Okay.
If they're just wrong.
Yes.
All right.
Okay. Cool.
And those are the ones that don't get deleted. Those are the ones that make it past the screeners. You can imagine what people will say under the cloak of anonymity that comes from comments. And now we're starting down another track. I mean, speaking about pouring liquid into the trash can, we've come so close to pouring the comments section into the trash can, and that's an ongoing discussion, and who knows? That may be floating around somewhere with your liquid. All right, stay on target, Pete's telling me. Come on, Pete, making the Star Wars reference, although my tweet to announce that the show was starting is also a Star Wars reference, so I can't give Pete a hard time for that. Here we go, beyond Dak Prescott.
Right.
Finally, we're getting there.
Yeah.
The tags were distributed to 9 different players, and let's just talk through them as they pop up. Let's start with the guys tagged for the second straight year. Those are the guys who are either going to get long-term deals by July 15, or they will be free agents next year because the franchise tag for Allen Robinson's not second straight year. He, Brandon Scherff, Leonard Williams, Justin Simmons are second
right.
straight year. Allen Robinson, we need to fix that graphic. Pete says it's his mistake. Pete apparently was not staying on target when he was putting this graphic together. Take that.
Chop his
head
off. Scherff, the hell of them.
Scherff, Leonard Williams, and Justin Simmons, they're not going to get tagged next year, so it's either a long-term deal or they're going to be walking away in free agency after 2 years of being tagged, Chris. And, you know, it's a big price tag. It's a 20% raise over their tag from last year, but it just shows you what the teams think of these guys, and it shows you how important it is to be able to keep these guys from walking away to the highest bidder, and these teams don't want to have to worry about someone else paying more for the services of these three players.
No, definitely not. And all three of those players are like huge parts of their football team. You know, they got the teams backed into a corner a little bit because of the situation. Brandon Scherff, let's just start there. He's one of the best guards in football. And then even with the second year franchise tag, you know, it is not a number that you look at and go, well, this is ridiculous that they're paying him. No, it's not far off from what, if he signs a long-term deal, what his average per year contract will be. So to me, that was a no-brainer with Brandon Scherff and doing that. He's too good of a football player. You don't let that guy walk out the door. Leonard Williams, you know, again, we know a really good football player, but he's got the leverage and the thing you've talked about many, many times, you know, whether it was Jalen Ramsey or a few other guys, where they get traded, a team gives up, you know, a decent haul for the guy, and now he's played really well, and he's one of the few guys that can pressure the quarterback on the football team. In fact, he's really the only guy. Everybody else we've talked about, it's about size, they're physical up front with the Giants, but he's the true disruptor of the group. So, yeah, they keep him, and I understand that. He's the only presence they got on the outside edge of the line, and he's versatile, can move inside and do a lot of things there. And we talked about Justin Simmons yesterday, who I think is one of the three best safeties in football. without question. And with him, with the Vic Fangio scheme and all that. And again, you know, Mike, you look at that number and go, okay, even what he's making for a second year franchise tag number, it's not astronomical to where you go, oh, that's crazy for 1 year for a free safety. Again, when you match it up with the other top average salaries at the position, it's right there with it. So to me, that it made sense. And I would think, like, I would think Scherf and Simmons for sure have a good chance of getting a long-term deal done. The Leonard Williams one, I think, might be a little tricky.
And, you know, the reality is all these guys should have had their long-term deal last year in the form of either leaving through free agency or having their teams compete with these other franchises and paying more money to keep them around and giving them more security. And to get the second tag, that meant they had to survive the injury risk
right
last year, survive the risk that maybe they weren't going to be as desirable, because trust me, none of these guys would have been tagged a second time if their teams didn't say, we must keep them based upon how they performed last year. Not, well, you know what? We did the franchise tag. It's, you know, he regressed and now we're going to let him leave. These are all players who are highly desired by their teams and they are sticking around. So those are the three that were tagged a second time. And again, July 15, the clock now ticks toward that date as the deadline for a long-term deal. A couple of receivers got tagged. One, not a surprise. The other, to me, a surprise. Let's start with Allen Robinson, the Bears receiver. We saw this coming. We knew this was coming. We sensed it was coming. The Bears don't have a bunch of great players on offense. They're scrambling to find a quarterback, whoever their quarterback is. And what a feeling that's got to be for Allen Robinson.
Right.
Hey, I'm going to be with the team this year. I don't have any idea who the quarterback's going to be.
No, I mean, tough spot for him. There's no commitment for a long-term salary. At least he's been disgruntled about that really since the halfway point of last year. We started to hear those rumblings, right? And you said it right, Mike. I mean, he's one of the few real, maybe only, blue chipper on the whole offense to where you go, wait, this guy, we got to look at him and game plan for him a little bit. And we got to make sure in certain situations we got the right matchup. You know, again, I don't look at him as a top five receiver in football, Allen Robinson, but he's one of those guys that's in that top 10 conversation. You know, like we talked about last year, there's 20 receivers that you could say are in the top 10 conversation. But yes, either way, he's their most dangerous weapon on the offense. And, you know, again, a team that seems in flux right now about what to do and are they going to make a move for Russell Wilson or Deshaun Watson and all those type of things, you can't let him hit the free agent market. They need to keep him in case they maybe want to use him as, you know, part of an asset to trade him as well. So for me, that was a no-brainer. Made a lot of sense that they kept Allen Robinson.
Not easy to trade a franchise tag
no.
player. He has to be fully on board with it. He has to sign his franchise tender first and foremost.
Right.
Because you can't trade a guy who is on the tag but has yet to accept the tag. And then after that, the new team is going to want a long-term deal most likely. They don't want to step into the shoes of the franchise tag team. And that makes it something that only is going to happen if the player wants to do it. And you talk about the prospect of trading Allen Robinson. If he would go to Seattle with Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf, that would be strange, to say the least,
yes,
to have him at it. Now, it'd make for a great receiving core, but if you're a pass catcher and you want to catch passes and they don't know who the Seahawks quarterback is going to be, but they got DK Metcalf, Allen Robinson, and Tyler Lockett, it just seems like Robinson wouldn't get the kind of production that he had this past year when he had 102 receptions for 1,250 yards. And Robinson, I just asked the crew that works with me at PFT if this has happened before, how often it happens, because I think this is a rarity where a guy gets franchise tagged not on the completion of his rookie contract. This is a guy who finished his four-year rookie deal in Jacksonville,
right,
left as a free agent,
yeah,
spent 3 years with the Bears, and now is getting tagged after seven NFL seasons and two teams. Usually it's 4 or 5 years out after you've been drafted. That's
You're
when
right.
you get franchise
really
tagged by the team that drafted you. So I'm curious if there's some way to research that and see how many guys are like this. I think Phil Dawson has been in that boat, but if you set aside kickers and punters, I don't think guys
Pete
get tagged
Shaq
very often.
Barrett in our
well,
year.
That's right.
That's
Shaq Barrett. Exactly.
Yeah, right.
That's a good one. Denver, 4 years, went to Tampa for a year, got tagged. So that's another guy who has moved as a free agent already,
yeah,
but then had the door slammed in his face. So maybe it's not as rare as I'm thinking.
No, I think it is, Mike. Path, I think you're right. Is, I think you're right.
The usual path is finish your rookie contract and get tagged or not tagged. Chris Godwin, the guy who got tagged in Tampa instead of Shaq Barrett. That's what surprised me. And yeah, when I saw the news that the Bucs were going to tag receiver Chris Godwin, a guy that I thought they could afford to let walk away given the depth at the position, and they needed to keep Barrett, I thought, well, we're going to hear that later today Shaq Barrett has a long-term deal. They're right, talking, but he doesn't have a long-term deal. So they may see Shaq Barrett walk away in free agency, Chris, because they have no way to keep him from leaving now that they used their one and only one tag on Chris Godwin.
No, it's that was the, I think, the splash of the day. You know, added to, right, first they got the Lavonte David contract. We saw that get done, and you went, whoa, okay, that's not a crazy price. Pretty manageable for what they did there. Wow, big, great job by Jason Light and the Bucks re-signing Lavonte David. There you go. And then, yeah, I expected to hear Shaquille Barrett as the franchise guy as well. Either way, Chris Godwin is worthy of being tagged. He is that type of talent. There's no doubt about that. And he's just hitting the prime of his career. So he's got lots of years in front of him. And I'm sure they don't want to see him walk out the door. But when you get into, like, the conversation, too, about Shaq Barrett, yeah, it's either, like, it's either, one, they felt like, okay, we're going to get a deal done with him that's pretty manageable, or it's, two, holy crap, he's really priced himself out of this, and this is an issue here, and I don't know if we're going to re-sign him. And I don't know, I have no inside info on where that goes, but to me, that's at least the two things that seem to be apparent here. I don't know. Have you got any feel for that?
Well, I was surprised that Godwin got the tag.
Yeah.
Because they already have Mike Evans.
Right.
And they're paying him a significant amount. Rarely can you see a team afford to put that much money into two receivers. They can do it for one.
Yeah.
But you typically can't do it for two. It's not unprecedented, but it's hard to do it for two. Secondly, with so many great young receivers every year now coming out in the draft, I feel like dollar for dollar,
yeah,
and every team goes through this exercise, dollar for dollar, you can't justify tying up that much money in a position where, look, they found Tyler Johnson last year, and they like Tyler Johnson. You bump him up and you backfill with another rookie, and you've got Scotty Miller, a guy that you drafted. And or was even undrafted. I don't know. I'd have to look that up. But a young guy who's still working his way through the system who isn't making much money, drafted or not, he's not making much money. Dollar for dollar, that's what you have to ask yourself. And that's what stunned me. Now, with Shaq Barrett, it very well could be that he wants so much that,
right,
like you said, they just know they can't do it.
Right.
And we've mentioned a few times how many pass rushers are hitting the market. They can just do what they did 2 years ago when they signed Shaq Barrett. He comes in as a stranger, and he has 19 sacks.
No.
So they'll find another pass rusher to come in. Maybe you can get two or three pass rushers for less than what it would cost to keep Shaq Barrett for a year.
No, I mean, you're right. Mike, you made that point on text yesterday, and when you said it, I went, ooh, that's a really good point. That might be part of the equation. You're right. With the fact that if he's asking for some huge, you know, and what was his going to be his franchise tag?
Going 18.99
million. 18.99 million. So I don't know what he's asking for, but there is a lot of guys out there, like you're talking about, on the edge, right, who won't be able to command Shaquille Barrett-type money. And, you know, he's a guy, again, you know, he was a middle-round pick, if I remember correctly, coming out of Colorado State, drafted by Denver, doing all that. He's just starting to make money. So he might be one of those guys that looks at it and goes, you know, listen, I love the Bucks, and I'd love to be here for a winner, but it's time for, you know, Big Daddy here to get paid, right? He might be one of those that goes, I need the money. I want some security, some long-term stuff and all that, and that becomes an issue. Okay, but then, yes, to your point, you know, there's guys out there like Leonard Floyd, for an example, and a lot of other players to where you go, wow, that's a really good player that's not going to be able to command $18 million a year or anything in that ballpark. And I think that makes a lot of sense, and I can see that. You know, Yannick Ngakoue, can he command that kind of money out on the market? I don't think so, not at this point. It's a good chunk of change, and I don't expect it to be him. But just adding to your point, there are a lot of good edge pass rushers out there.
And that's what's amazing, because we are reminded from time to time, specifically in the Super Bowl, how important it is to have great pass rushers. And then we kind of forget about it. And then we're reminded of it again by some dominant pass rushing performance in the Super Bowl. So this is a valuable position. I would put quarterback, pass rusher, tackle. I don't know. How do you rank them as overall value? Is pass rusher more valuable than a tackle?
I think so. I do. Yes. Yeah. I think I look at that and just go, a pass rusher, an elite pass rusher, can affect the game in so many ways. And tackle, of course, is very important for all the reasons to block those guys. But, man, a really elite defense, and, you know, they affect the run game. They can be great that way. And then, of course, the amount of, forget the sacks and things like that, it's the disruption, it's the quarterback pressures, everything that helps the secondary. So I would say that's probably the number two thing on my list too.
And that's what makes it amazing that so many of them are going to be floating around, and that's got to be factoring into the Buccaneers' thinking. This isn't something they just randomly did. This isn't just, well, Tommy wants his receiver here, so we have to keep the receiver, and we'll just have to figure something out on defense. Defense has to be a priority. Their defense has been a key part of that championship run. That defense helped them in many situations. That defense kept the Packers from parlaying three consecutive Tom Brady interceptions into a victory, what would have been a stunning come-from-behind victory. They were down 28-10, Green Bay was. The defense stiffened on two of those three
big
drives
time.
And kept the Packers from taking the lead. And then we know what happened. Yeah, down at the end, I assume that was one of the drives from resulting from one of the interceptions they almost scored the touchdown and
didn't go for it on fourth down
go for it on fourth down. Yeah. Right. So defense important, but maybe they think they can find another Shaq Barrett and not have to pay that kind of money. Barrett did say not that long ago he wants to break the bank. So we know that his objective is to get paid maximum dollars, and to get maximum dollars, he may have to go somewhere else.
That's where, when you really look at it and you hear those comments, and just That was my first thought, like I said, that he might be asking for, you know, they realized, man, this is going to be a one-year thing, and he's out of here because he's looking to break the bank. And from Shaquille Barrett's standpoint, he can look at other defense ends in football right now and go, wait, I've been better than these guys for 3 years now, and they're making a ton of money. And here, I'll just throw out some names. I mean, he certainly can look at DeMarcus Lawrence and Frank Clark, who I got a lot of respect for Frank Clark and what he does. But he can look at them realistically and go, wait, I've been better than them for 2 or 3 years now. He can look at Trey Flowers, who went from New England to the Detroit Lions, who's making $18 million a year, and go, I'm definitely better than him. There's no doubt about it. So I affect the game in more areas and do all those type of things. So from that standpoint, you look at it, and yeah, I look at Shaquille Barrett, and I'm not mad at him if he's asking for $20 million a year or north of that for where the market is and things like that, and he's the next guy up and all of that. So it'll be interesting to watch what happens with him here as we go along.
And you know, it's not just looking at the guys who are going to hit the market. It's considering the guys who may still yet hit the market. Von Miller and the Broncos have yet to figure out their situation. The Broncos obviously and reportedly want Von Miller to take less than $18 million this year. If he hits the market, we don't know what kind of conversations he and Tom Brady have been having. You know, there's all sorts of tampering that isn't really tampering that happens among players. The idea of Tom and Von reuniting or uniting, they've never been united before except on opposite sides of the ball in Tampa. You know, that's just one of the paths that the Buccaneers can take.
It is.
And that's where the challenge becomes, forgetting who the guy is, forgetting what he's done, and saying, we got to make a good decision. And the other side of this, too, and this may be why Barrett wants so much money. I mean, he knows what else is out there. All it takes is one owner to say, I want that guy, I want that guy, I want that guy. And you know what? His team is going to pay that guy.
Sure.
And that getting that guy who was part of a Super Bowl run and making him the centerpiece of your free agency class and also hurting the Buccaneers or thinking you're hurting the Buccaneers, that's part of this game too. There's a strong business component to free agency. You know, I've seen every year at this time we see the articles and the analyses which point to a conclusion that we already know. You don't build a championship team in free agency by spending big money.
No.
You do it by being smart and waiting for the market to settle and shopping for bargains. But you build a successful financial operation in part by creating excitement by going out and overpaying a free agent because you get season ticket renewals, you sell jerseys, you take attention away from other leagues, teams in other leagues in your market. There are business reasons for it to happen that are independent of whether or not it's ever going to help you win a Super Bowl. And that's part of the reality. And even in a year with a reduced cap, Chris, there's going to be teams that want to make that splash, especially as we recover from the pandemic. We start thinking about selling tickets for 2021. It helps to sell tickets if you can say, we got Shaq Barrett away from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
No, no doubt about that. There is that aspect. Some teams looking to make a splash, just get, you know, in the good favor of the fans, get a little hype and propaganda going about, hey, we're doing the right things as an organization here. We're trying to win and do that. And that could very easily be Shaq Barrett. He would fit that mold, too, to where you're not going to have to pay him to be the highest paid defensive end in the history of football or anything like that. But you're going to be able to give him a splash contract and go, look, did you see what he did? Did you see all those highlights of him chasing down Mahomes and all over him? And did you see all those big sacks he had against Aaron Rodgers in that game? Yeah, the guy's big time. He shows up in big moments. And that will excite a fan base to what you're saying.
All right, some other guys who were tagged. Let's move to the offensive line other than Brandon Scherff. Taylor Moten, Panthers, and Cam Robinson, Jaguars, a couple of teams that entered the league together in 1995. Moten, not a surprise. Cam, a mild surprise, although the possibility of Cam Robinson being tagged was on the radar screen, and Urban Meyer explained yesterday the thought process. You know, the new coaching staff looked carefully at Cam Robinson, decided they needed to keep him, and they've got the cap space to do it, so they're keeping him from hitting free agency.
Yeah, I mean, that was a surprise to me. But when you break it down and what Urban Meyer said, you know, again, it goes into a little bit of like it's the overall state of the offensive line that I think gets taken into an account here, where Urban Meyer looks at it and goes, wait, you know, a little bit like Allen Robinson with the Bears. He goes, well, this is the really only quality offensive lineman we got on the football team here. Everything else is a little bit, you know, dicey here. There's no, like, mainstay dominant football player. And Cam Robinson's real good. Is he worth, you know, franchise tag type money? Not to me, he's not. But when you take in the current, you know, situation and the things he's talking about, he's trying to build something. He's going to draft Trevor Lawrence. Well, okay, we got a pretty good one that we think we can make him better to draft it and protect Trevor Lawrence and do those type of things. So from all that standpoint, it makes sense. Yeah, I don't think he's one of the three or four or five best tackles in football. I don't. And I think most people would agree with that. So that was a little bit of a surprise, but I think when you take in the whole team and roster into account, it does make sense for what Urban said.
Safeties also got tagged yesterday beyond Justin Simmons. Marcus Williams of the Saints.
Yeah,
that was a surprise. Marcus May of the Jets was not. And what surprised me about the Saints, all the cap issues we're talking about, right. I figured they'd be the last team to consider using the tag on anyone.
I went through this exercise on my podcast like 2 weeks ago, and we talked about Marcus Williams. And now he's a guy that is worthy of the franchise tag, but I didn't think they would do it. Not with the current state of where they're at. I mean, holy cow, do they got a lot of work to do in New Orleans. What are they going to do here? You know, I know you can make it work and do a lot of stuff, but they are – Where is their current status, Mike, right now as far as the salary cap? I mean, it's way, way over still. I mean, way over. I want to say it's – there we go. Here's Pete, Johnny on the spot. Yeah, I was going to say it's close to $60
million. Wow.
So that's they got a lot of fat to trim. Holy cow. And I'm going to be interested to see who goes by the wayside and what they can do to make this happen.
Well, I know one guy that very well could be gone in the next week, and that's Marshawn Lattimore. He's got an eight-figure salary in his option year coming up. It becomes fully guaranteed on the first day of the league year. Unless he takes less, he could be gone. That's an easy way to take a chunk out of that, but you still got a lot more that you have to do, a lot of work that needs to be done. They've been restructuring contracts, and they're still in that spot. Now, the problem this time of year is that The numbers like the one we just put up doesn't always reflect recent efforts to reduce the cap. So, you know, they're getting closer. They're doing what they can. And Mickey Loomis, who received plenty of praise on Twitter yesterday for somehow, some way figuring it out. And that's the reality. They will find a way to figure it out.
Oh,
They'll do whatever they have to do,
well,
period. Yeah. And if they have to just cut guys, they're going to cut guys.
Well, that's where you look at it, all right? And you just try to look at, okay, who's the guys that – got a big cap hit, and there's a good difference between the cap hit and the dead money and what there is there to be had. You talked about Marshawn Lattimore. Okay, yeah, that's right. They could take a huge chunk off, like you said, $10 million. A look at Janoris Jenkins, who played really good football last year. But they could save around $7 million with him. Teron Armstead, yeah, real good left tackle, but has been injured and getting up there in years. They can save another $7 million with him. Are they going to make those type of moves? That's what I'm interested to see here for Mickey Loomis, Sean Payton, and kind of how they orchestrate their team here going forward. And it just looks to me on the outside looking in that they're going to have to make some uncomfortable moves here and cut some guys that they don't want to cut. But that's just the reality of the situation.
One thing that I've been looking at is the possibility of a Michael Thomas trade.
Yeah.
Because remember, there was some discussion along right. those lines when the relationship went south during the season. But if they would trade him pre-June
it hurts them,
they
right?
are looking at, my gosh, they are looking at $20 million in acceleration.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they would avoid $12 million or so in payment to him, almost $13 million in payment, but you're going to take a $20 million cap charge to trade him. Post-June 1, they could pull it off, but that's a guy that's going to be very hard to chop his down. But you basically have to go player by player, line by line, contract by contract, and see what fat can we trim here? What can we do here to maybe push some money into future years or get a guy to take a pay cut where we're not moving money around or just get rid of the guy altogether? And then what are the cap consequences if he's traded or if he's released? And that's what a good general manager has to do. The problem this year for every team, and specifically for the teams that already were going to be pressed up against the cap, you've got $15.7 million left. That's the less. That's the expected drop.
Right.
I'm told it's almost definitely going to be 182.5. That's 15.7 less than what it was going to be. So it's going to make it more of a challenge. Drew Brees did them a hell of a favor by dropping his base salary from 25 to the minimum of 1.075. But even then, that was just the first cut. They still have a lot to do to get this figured out. And now they've got an eight-figure salary that will be devoted to Marcus Williams that they need to get figured out. And here's the other side of it, too. Until he signs it, they could rescind it if they wanted to. They're not bound by this. If they just get to a point where we can't get from here to there
right.
as they're figuring out the cap and they need another $10 million, they just rescind the tag
the old Josh
from Marcus
Norman
Williams.
Move. Right.
As long as he doesn't sign it. Once he signs it, and if you're Marcus Williams, you may want to think about checkmate here
right.
and saying, I'll take that eight-figure salary, but they could always pull it away, and that could be a way that they help get to where they are. But, yeah, it's not going to be easy. A lot of sleepless nights for Mickey Loomis and his staff coming up over the course of the next week.
Yeah, really. I mean, it really is. And, again, there's still a team that you look at and go, wow, they're a quality football team. Yeah, they're a year older. But even without Drew Brees, I expect the Saints to be very relevant next year. But I mean, you got to see how this all shakes out because they're going to have to make some tough decisions. I don't know if that's going to be via trade, things like that, whatever. But they're going to have to get real creative here. As creative as I can remember any top team in the league here in recent history. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, but I was kind of trying to think about it, you know, on the drive in here to the show today. Like, I don't remember a team like a Saints, you know, upper echelons, cream of the crop type of football.
There
team.
We go.
Yep, I'm getting there.
No, you're not. You said upper echelons
you're right,
again.
Upper echelon. You're right. Upper echelon. Sorry. It rolls off the
upper
tongue way better.
Upper echelon.
Lawn?
It
there's
ends
no
T
in there?
N.
Oh, there is a no
there's
T
no
in
T.
there. The hell with it. I don't care if I ever get it right, so don't worry. Don't even
some
fix
of these
me
things
next time.
We fix with one, some, it's a process. We got him to take the S off of upper echelons. Now we got to get him to drop the T and just call it upper echelon. That's the next phase.
But do you remember a team ever like that has?
Not like this.
Right.
Well, I remember a team like the Titans at one point where they just accepted that for this year they were in cap purgatory. So, you know, there's certain things they couldn't do. And, you know, I remember teams scrambling to make sure they had enough cap space left to sign their draft picks. You know, that used to be pre-2006, really. That used to be an issue. It started to subside after the 2006 CBA, and after 2011, you rarely hear of it. The Steelers and the right. Cowboys are really the only teams you ever hear of having to scramble to create cap space. And this whole idea of restructuring contracts, you don't avoid the cap dollars. You just push them into future years. But as the cap keeps going up and up and up, those dollars have a lower relative value. There's
right.
deflation because a dollar today under this cap means a hell of a lot less under a future cap when there's more dollars to spend. And that's what teams do. That's part of what the Saints are going to have to do, push money into future years. Of course, one of the problems is past money from Drew Brees pushed into this year. That's one of the reasons why they're in this mess. When you kick the can, at some point there's a reckoning. And if the cap drops, that's when the reckoning arrives.
Yeah.
Chris's reckoning is arriving, at least the first phase of it, because he multitasked during the first segment, unless someone else posted the tweet. The poll so far. Now, this is very, very early returns. That's only 125 votes. We're up to 1,900, and it's worse. It's 81.9% no, you monster, on the question of whether it's okay to pour liquid into a trash can. Your first response, though, says yes, as long as I'm the one who has to take out the trash. Thank you very much, Dan Turco, with an umlaut over the O, so that, it may that, not be Turco.
Where I don't buy this, I don't buy this bull crap here, right here, okay? I think we got a lot of Twitter users right now that are you kidding me? How many of them throw in, like, you know, a huge thing of Coke, a 32-ouncer Big Gulp or something like that, and they throw it away with 10 ounces left in there? That's some baloney. I don't think people are being real about this.
I think they're being accurate, and I think they're being reasonable, and I think they're being fair to whoever has to deal with the mess that is left in the trash can. Let's take a break. We're going to talk about the guys who didn't get tagged on Tuesday when PFT Live continues right after this.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
For the world's greatest athletes.
This is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again!
Goal for the United States! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics. Friday, July 26th on NBC and Peacock. For the world's greatest athletes.
This is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again!
Goal for the United States! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics. This summer on NBC and streaming on Peacock.
All right, celebrate if you didn't get tagged. Plenty of guys were not tagged on Tuesday, and we thought there was a chance they would be. Only two receivers tagged. Kenny Golladay was the biggest surprise of guys who were not tagged. We didn't expect Juju Smith-Schuster to be tagged in Pittsburgh. The other guys on this list, we really didn't have them on the radar screen. Golladay's the one that the indications seemed to be the Lions were going to tag him. We had Dan Campbell, the coach of the team, talking last week that it's actually a good thing to be tagged, even though it's not. So Golladay not tagged. He didn't play much last year, Chris. And this is something Shereen Williams and I were kicking around last night. I can't help but wonder whether his frustration with not getting a long-term deal last year before the season started contributed to his willingness or lack thereof to play with a tweaked hamstring, the old hold in. And I'm not passing judgment here. It happens from time to time where a guy isn't willing to go out there and take risks sure. with his body when he's yet to get his financial security.
That's right. No, that's a real aspect. I mean, of course, what do you expect? I mean, what do people expect? Do they think that's really fair to that guy? Again, he's his own business. So his business is being able to play football. And if he can't play it, you know, towards the 100% level, let alone he's got not getting the financial security to go, okay, I'll risk it. It's all right. The team's invested in me, and I'll go out there and do what I got to do. You know, we saw that over this past year, that team that emboldened players to do that. You know, whether it was Dalvin Cook or Alvin Kamara, okay, you paid me, I'll play. I'm not 100%, whatever it is, get it done. Yeah, I've talked about that story with Brandon Marshall many a times, right? I'm in the locker room in Philadelphia, and he's a psycho, of course, because he wants to play and beat DBs up and run over safeties and doing all that. And he's frustrated. We're sitting there looking at each other's uniforms in the mirror, getting ready just to go out here. And he just looks at me and he yells, "Ah!" And I'm like, "What? What's up, dude?" And he's, I can't do this. I can't play like this. I can't lay it all on the line when I'm two games away from being a free agent and setting up my family." And it's not in the NFL player's DNA to want to do that. But this is the way the rules are. Business is business. And Kenny Golladay, I'm sure that was part of, you know, the issue. But I'm still shocked he didn't get tagged. I'm shocked. Marvin Jones, free agent. You know, there's not really any receiver on that roster that you look at and go, okay, he's special. He's got a chance. I thought they would keep him, especially since they got Jared Goff and they might want to, you know, they want to make that work and make him look good. So I'll be interested to see where this goes and if they can get a deal done with Kenny Golladay.
Plenty of great receivers in the draft, but it's a ton of work that needs to be done to get these guys ready to go. And just because you saw Justin Jefferson last year do great right out of the gates, and we saw other guys, yeah, lower level guys like Gabriel Davis in Buffalo do right. great, that doesn't mean you're going to bat 1,000 with something like that. You're taking a chance by having a rookie instead of a veteran. And with Golladay, he had 1,190 receiving yards in 2019, Pro Bowler, started all games, 116 receptions, 11 touchdowns. Last year, he played in 5 games with 20 catches. He had 65 catches. I'm looking at his target. 65 catches in 2019, still a Pro Bowler with 1,190 yards, 20 catches last year for 338. And now he hits the open market. And the question is, do other teams who understand how this works understand that the production was down last year because the playing time was down, and the playing time was down because he wasn't comfortable going forward with the contract year and not getting the contract reward? And if people get that, then he'll still get a significant contract on the open market.
Well, the what jumps out to me there, at least like if I was going to, you know, read between the tea leaves, right, with a good Simsism there, the fact that they didn't franchise tag him, that makes me believe that they're kind of going into a semi-full overhaul, right? Like it's a new coach. You know, we got the new quarterback, and we're changing over this football team. We're flipping it over all together, and we'll get all new pieces and do that, right? I mean, that's at least what it seems like to me from the outside looking in right now.
It's the kneecap biter mentality. Now, we have fun with that Dan Campbell quote that he wants guys who's going to bite one kneecap off on the way down and the other kneecap off on the way up. But it's that hard-nosed, blue-collar, old-school, rough-and-tumble football that the Lions are going to be injecting into the organization. And it comes from Chris Spielman. Rick Spielman, Chris's brother, said last week on PFTPM that when his wife saw the Dan Campbell introductory press conference, she said, "That's exactly the guy that Chris was going to hire. He was destined to hire a guy like that to be the head coach of the team." That's the mindset. So, you know, they're going to go out and find some roughnecks.
And you're right.
Anthony Lynn's the OC, right? Hey,
yeah.
That 49ers team in 2019, the way that defense played, you know, we've talked about reduced opportunities to have live tackling in practice, reduced padded practices, reduced opportunities to get guys to the point where they have that Jim Harbaugh-style callus,
right,
where they can just go out and do it. So you find guys who are wired to do it. You find guys who will run into a wall, bounce off, and laugh.
Yeah.
That's what they're going to be looking for. They're going to, if they know how to find these guys, they're going to have some badasses on that team that across the board are going to be rough and tough,
right,
and they may not bite off your kneecap, but they definitely will try.
Yeah, I agreed. I would think that, I mean, that's going to be the mantra of their football team. It's going to be, we're going to beat you up physically. Dan Campbell just came from a team that's what they had too. Like you talk about the 49ers in 2019, the Saints are one of those teams too. You know, we always think about it as Drew Brees and throwing the ball, but they've been one of the most physical teams in the NFL for the last 5 years. They're fun to watch on film because they try to kill people. That's what I respect about them. So, yeah, he's going to take that Bill Parcells, Sean Payton approach, it seems like. Anthony Lynn wants to run the football, play a physical brand of football as an offensive coordinator and do that. It seems to be the way. Either way, I'm still surprised with Golladay just because he's a real threat on the outside. You see the average yards per catch. He's a deep ball threat. He's a great 50-50 guy. And, of course, he can do some of the underneath stuff too, but he is a real home run threat. And that's where I was a little surprised that they didn't get it done or franchise him altogether.
Another mild surprise, the Packers didn't apply the franchise tag to running back Aaron Jones. They're still negotiating with him. They don't want to pay him top-tier running back money. And, Chris, something I firmly believe – running backs only get top-tier money from the team that they entered the league with. You become a free agent, you're Melvin Gordon, you're getting $8 million a year
right.
at best. And I think the Packers are trying to be aware of that and not get caught up in paying Aaron Jones just so they can tell their fans we've kept Aaron Jones. They want to pay Aaron Jones something that's more in line with what the market would bear.
Well, I can understand that. You know, we hit on this a little bit yesterday as far as Aaron Jones – yes, he's a really good running back. He's an explosive element to their football team. You know, I mean, I'm asking you. I mean, I don't look at Aaron Jones and think he's one of the five best running backs in football. Do you? I mean, I don't look at it that way. I think he's really damn good. He's explosive and a big play threat, but I don't think he's in the category of like the Alvin Kamaras, the Dalvin Cooks, the Derrick Henrys, or the Christian McCaffrey, or even the Joe Mixons when he's healthy. I think he's that next group of guys down. So I don't know what he's asking for or what kind of money. That's really the big thing. But either way, I'm shocked. And I know they're not in the best salary cap position, but it's not, like, horrible. I would have thought they would try to sign him, you know, franchise him, and then try to figure out a way, you know, to get a contract done. What's the franchise tag number for a running back right now?
The estimate was like $11 million, which seems really, really high, and right. we're really, really heavy. They're telling me we should take a break.
Okay,
so we'll be tracking the Aaron Jones thing over the course of the next week because he's in play to get paid by someone, Packers or someone else, maybe the Miami Dolphins, maybe someone else. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more right after this. No scouting combine, but plenty of pro day workouts. Rashawn Slater, glasses on, Bob Greasy style. Can he do it? That's a lot of plates
I
there.
I love how the weight coach is slapping him in the back. That's a front squat? Whoa.
How do you not compress your spine? And there it is. No problem.
Man, he's going
whoa,
deep.
Got two. He's got two of them. Oh, man. Can he get three? Does he have the legs and butt to do three, Chris? Yes, he does. And glasses stay on.
Wow. Can we rewind that one more time? He legitimately was pissed. You know, sorry, Manchester or Liverpool. But yes, like that weight coach was messing with him, slapping him in the back. He was literally getting mad there. Like he wanted to like push him back and do something to him. But that's phenomenal. How many plates were on each side? Was it five?
I saw five or six.
Wow. So that's
important difference.
That's close to 500 pounds, I think. Whoa.
That's a lot. That's a lot of weight.
More than you can do.
Slightly more. We'll be right back.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.